A Hero's Journey is, by its nature, a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book beforehand and then diving into the episode, but proceed at your own risk.
Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge Jack, and I'm here with my sister from another mister.
This is Alex.
And this week, rather than Zach, we are joined by our special guest host, Kevin, who actually suggested this book to us.
How's it going?
Well, we're excited to have you on, Kevin.
Thanks.
This week on A Hero's Journey, we're discussing A Brother's Price by Wen Spencer. This book follows two characters, mainly Jaren and Ren, through a world where some kind of illness has made the birth of a male child very rare. So kind of a flip on our normal society, men are treated as delicate and things to be protected, while women do more of the dangerous work and more of the hard work. Ren is one of the princesses of this land who runs into Jaren after her and her sister are ambushed near their farm. Ren and Jaren quickly fall in love, and most of the story focuses on how Ren can scheme to have Jaren marry her without really breaking traditions of the land where princesses can only marry noblemen. Throughout all of this, a plot is uncovered by another noble family trying to overthrow the current queens and take control. The book ends with that plot being undone and Jaren marrying all of the princesses and living happily ever after.
And that is going to kick us off in our departure, where we start all good quests, finding out that you're being sold to the family next door to work like a stallion for the rest of your life. Kevin is actually going to be judging for this episode, but I just couldn't resist the chance to introduce this horrifying quest.
So what Jack said, our quest this week is for Jaren to find a good for his family and himself, essentially. And our call, oddly enough, is hearing of an attack on the farm. The reason this is the call to adventure is this is how he's introduced to the princesses, who he eventually ends up marrying and spends a good deal of the quest, a good deal of the book, actually pining over. Our refusal of the call is after meeting the princesses, Jaren learns that he's going to be married to the neighbors, the Brindles. Not kidding, that's their actual name. And it's essentially, if he was married to them, he would be like a stud horse, you know, with the Brindles. It's a bad pun. All right, going on to beating up the mentor. I think this is Lieutenant Raven, who is the captain of Princess Ren's guard. She is the one who returns to the farm to take Jaren into the high society, to the capital city, to meet the queen and other nobles. And she provides a lot of knowledge and protection to Jaren about the world that he's about to enter. And she also gives a good word to Ren, telling him that Jaren is an intelligent and respectful person, and that he would be a good candidate to marry now that they've spent a little bit more time in a different situation. For our crossing the threshold, this is very clearly Jaren leaving the farm that he's grown up on and essentially lived his whole life on. He's not really left the farm except for the local village fairs. And now he's going to a whole new situation, including a whole new capital city and interacting with noblemen. And finally, for our belly of the whale, this is Jaren's presentation to the queen. The reason this is the belly is can't go back. Jaren's sister, as they were traveling to the capital city, committed to buying a store from a family that has no husband and no children of their own, and are trying to sell it to get money for retirement. And when Jaren is presented to the queen, he's presented with the explicit goal of getting a brother's price of 4,000 crowns, or so his sister can purchase the store and set their family up well for the future.
Starting off here, I think you've laid out what is a classic Austin-style plot. We've got a eligible, nice young man who's just out to make the best match that can look after him and his family. Though I did notice one odd thing in your description, Alex. You talk about how much he wants to marry the Princess Wren. And then throughout this entire departure, you keep referring to the princesses plural here. And so I'm a little curious about our love story here when you keep adding that S. Do you want to maybe explain to some of our readers who might not know where this is going?
It's so rare. Instead of one man and one woman marriage, there are many women, typically sisters, marry one man as a whole big family unit.
It's got to suck for everyone else that didn't fall immediately in love with Jaren.
Yes.
with that out of the way, it's not our most stunning of calls to adventure. It is the event that puts him on the path to this being brought into a new world and meeting Wren. So I don't have much of a problem with the call. I do wish that we didn't have so many boys on farms dealing with attacks that then got swept into bigger things, but you know what? Star Wars works.
It's a classic.
Where I have to push back on your refusal of the call is, well, it might not be the happiest life outcome for Jaren. I noticed that your quest isn't Pride and Prejudice. We're not looking for Jaren to be happy. We're looking for him to find a good match for his family. And is there anything wrong with marrying the neighbors from that perspective?
Sure,
the princesses get assassinated later, but you know.
There are some concerns with marrying the Brindles. One being that weird that we have this, not 2 weeks in a row, but relatively soon. One being that there's a concern that some incest has occurred among that family. And then the family that Jaren could marry into, the Brindles, doesn't have the best reputation around. So it might water down his family's impeccable reputation in the city, the small city that they live in.
One of the things they mention later in the book is that it's very likely or widely believed in their small community farm town that the Brindles might be smuggling to make ends meet because they're really crappy farmers and yet still have enough to support 30-ish people. Mm-hmm. And one of the penalties is for smuggling is that all of your properties is stripped away, and men being property, Jaren would be one of those things that would be end up basically going to the...
And I understand how that's bad for Jaren, but once again, once he's been sold off in marriage and the brother's price has been paid, is his family still pretty much okay with that?
I mean, technically, yes, but there's a lot of prestige that they would lose. They're a highly respected family, and the connection to smugglers and having their brother end up in... Oh, what do they call brothels, Kevin? They call
cribs.
Them cribs.
Yeah, they're cribs.
Yeah, that would put a kind of a black mark on the family. I mean, financially, they would be okay. They would also have a husband for his sisters. So technically, everything would be fine for them, except a blow to the reputation.
As an aside, would it not be possibly a better refusal of the call when the princesses first leave? And he doesn't make any comment, even though he wants to go with them or say something or I don't know. Instead, he goes, no, it's for... So if the call to adventure, right, was meeting the princesses, the attack on the farm, and saving their lives, instead of kind of going with them or making any outward sign, he just says, you know, something along the lines of, I wish you well, or I wish you luck, or whatever.
So I think that's kind of rolled into this. The concern over marrying the neighbors is also concerned that he's not good enough for the princesses. He's not from a noble family, a big amount of land or money to connect with them. And that's a big reason why he thinks that he will have to marry the Brindles.
I mean, Kevin, you're a judge here this week. I guess I'm proposing is the crux of my question. Do you feel that marrying the Brindles, while it might end our story prematurely, wouldn't have been a boon into itself?
Yeah, I think I'm probably siding towards Jack on this one. I think that it's not the best or not the most clear-cut refusal. He has his concerns and everything about, you know, where he'll end up, and has what he would like, but he's willing to kind of put aside what he'd like, just accept whatever his family decides is for them in their best interest. And so I don't know that he's necessarily refusing the call there.
On our wonderful Lieutenant Raven, I see how the final like nod to Ren saying that Jaren has her approval is a gift, but I don't know if she has all of the other mentor-like qualities. I get that she seems to check a lot of the boxes, but I don't know, I feel like she's kind of lacking in our other normal desired clause, which is to actually want to help the hero.
No, I think she does want to help Jaren. She's obviously more concerned about her friends and protectorates, the princesses. But,
her liege, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. She does want to help Jaren. She thinks that he would be a good match for her, and she strives to protect him from a lot of the issues that come up. She tries to protect him when he is kidnapped and is part of the group that goes after him to save him. So while she is more concerned about the princesses, she does also care about and try and help Jaren.
Yeah, I think that she makes a pretty solid mentor. I think maybe the only other option for one would be the Cullen later on in the story, but as far as like earlier on, she is definitely the one who seems to kind of be guiding him a little bit into what to expect and what pitfalls to avoid.
And as many of our listeners will know, anytime we say that about a character in the mentor step, it almost always means they're either the meeting with the higher power or the creator.
Yep.
On our crossing the threshold in Belly of the Whale, crossing the threshold, classic. It's the farthest I've ever been from home when I take that next step. Hard to argue with. But with the Belly of the Whale, I'm just not 100% certain. It's a debate we've been having a lot recently, but I find it hard to believe that once he's left the farm that and he's with them, and especially the sisters made the obligation to the shop, that he really has a chance to go back and be the Brindle stud mare even before the meeting with the queen.
Well, I think you're partially right in that, you know, he does know he needs to make that brother's price. He needs to get the certain amount of money. But that happens between when they leave the farm on the journey to the queen, essentially, and the presentation to the queen. Why I think it's a belly is because now he knows he's going to be introduced to the court, and there's a lot he has to do to prepare for that still. Whereas before, if they had turned back or found a family along the way, he wouldn't really need to stick around with the queen or in the court if they had found a family along the way who was willing to pay that brother's price they needed. They could have just sold him essentially and returned home.
And then how do you think Princess Wren would have handled that if they just stopped and sold him along the way?
Considering that they weren't told that that's what she was bringing him to the capital for, I don't think she would be able to do much about it. But I mean, obviously, yeah, I agree. She probably wouldn't be very happy.
Yeah, I mean, they're both strong points. I got to give it to you. I'm doing a little bit of a fishing expedition with these ones.
Yeah, I would agree with leaving the farm and then presentation of the queen. I think Belly of the Whale and Crescent Threshold are both there. So basically getting 4 out of 5, obviously no refusal of the call in this particular case, or having fairly weak refusal. That brings us to the next part, the initiation.
So moving on to our initiation and the road of trials, I think a lot of the trials for Jaren are trying to get the princesses and the queen to agree to let him marry, even though he does this kind of unknowingly, as the princesses don't reveal their intentions to marry him until the deal is practically signed. But the trials are learning the ways of the court, charming the family, including Trini, especially, and the younger sisters, and then later resisting his captors. So all of these are working to make Jaren worthy and big quotes in the eyes of the queens to marry the princesses. And also in the eyes of the princesses, who all have to agree to the marriage. So in learning the court ways, Jaren is learning how to act properly and to just be charming. And charming the family, Jaren works with the younger sisters, the youngest sisters of the princesses, who will eventually become his wives. This is so weird. part of that is charming Trini, who has been married previously to the old prince consort, who was abusive towards her. So she doesn't trust men in general. So really, there's a big struggle for him to get her approval. And then finally, when Jaren is captured, he has to resist his captors, some of whom are making just vague threats at his virtue. Again, this book is so weird. and that keeps him, in big quotes again, pure for the marriage, which will come into play later. For a higher power, I can't think of anyone better than Colin. Like Kevin said, Colin introduces Jaren to being a man in this noble world. He's also a good friend to him. And Colin eventually ends up marrying Jaren's sisters, which allows them to be even closer family.
Yes, the classic higher power move of marrying all your sisters.
Jack, you're killing me. Every time you laugh, it makes me want to laugh.
For the temptress here, I think this is just other offers at marriage to Jaren that would help his sisters, but isn't the best offer for them. The specific offer that Jaren hears is from Kij, one of the porters, who have the plot to overthrow the current queens. And that is actually our atonement with the creator. Hearing Kij's plan to overthrow the queens. And the reason this is the creator moment is because Jaren would not have met the princesses without the porter's attack on the princesses near their land. Jaren wouldn't be in the current position he's in, captured, or in the position of any of the princesses, except for the porter's plot to overthrow the crown, which led them to killing some of the older princesses and, unfortunately for them, their brother. And all of this, I think, comes at the right moment. It's the center point of the book. Now that Jaren has been captured, there's a lot of concern about if the princesses can get him back or not. And, you know, Kij's plan is revealed, and we get to see how she has been kind of weaving through the story, getting Jaren closer to the princesses and the promised marriage. For the apotheosis, this is the revelation that Sierra, the woman who has been kind of helping Jaren after being kidnapped, going from the river trash to Kij and surviving a big shipwreck, is actually Haley, one of the princesses who has been missing in disguise. And that allows us to have our ultimate boon, which is the reunion with Jaren and all of his potential wives, the Princess Wren, Haley, and the rest of their sisters.
Sorry, I now understand why Zach clears his throat all the time as well. Alex, for this road of trials, I've really got two things that I
feel the need to discuss. And one of them you kind of tried to sidestep, but I feel like we need to address it. Learning the court ways, very clearly a trial. I think we've had similar ones before.
Mm-hmm.
It's our character moving from one boundary to another. Perfect. Charming the family. I have a reflex need to argue against this because it involves convincing children that he will be a good husband.
Well, the younger sisters and sisters who aren't of age don't get to like aid in the decision. He's just charming them because he's good with children. He's taking care of a lot of his younger brothers and sisters. So he's literally just playing with them. That's how he charms them.
Yeah.
So the adult male is playing with the young girls.
I see what I did there.
And then on resisting his captors, you've tied the other two quite clearly to active strides forward into getting himself into a position to get this marriage offer. But outside of maintaining his purity, which is gross when it's talked about with women and still gross when it's talked about with men, I feel like we're missing a little bit here on linking that one back to his evolution, not even as a failed trial, just not even sure it's linking back in the way that we'd normally want.
This is a big deal for the queens, especially because if Jaren is even alone with the captors for a period of time where someone could conceivably have done something, then he's going to be seen as unclean and not able to marry the princesses. Jaren actually struggles a lot with this. He uses a lot of his skills that make him interesting to the princesses, including using a gun and a knife and sleight of hands. While he's, you know, resisting the captors, he's also displaying a lot of the skills that made the princesses interested in him in the first place. His intelligence, his kind of like creativity to escape and get away from the captors as quickly as he can.
And he uses these skills to somehow convince people that he wasn't in a compromising position.
Well, Sierra Haley is with him for most of this time, and using him with Sierra is what allows the princesses to say, oh, he's clean, because there was literally a princess with him watching what was happening for a majority of this time.
Fair. I guess ultimately all of this comes back to the fact that this book makes me deeply uncomfortable.
Hey man, it's, what is it? 18th century tropes? Just gender swap?
Yeah, well, we have read plenty of books with needing chaperones, and so few of them make me this uncomfortable. Yeah, I mean, Kevin, it's ultimately up to you. I do think that they might technically meet the journey, but boy, do I not like these as trials.
Yeah, I think that considering how ravaged by STDs they seem to be in this world, and how much of a high bar they put on chastity and like prior to marriage, I would say that the resisting of his captors, the, I guess, working, like you said, to kind of stay near Ciara, as he believed her to be at the time, ended up being a pretty good trial in general. I definitely agree that the other two, learning the ways of the court, bringing the eligible members of the family, the older sisters, princesses of the family, into, I guess, being charmed by him, as you kind of put it earlier, also fit that description pretty well. So I have to give this one to Alex.
I'm sorry. Can we just, I just feel like we need to talk about it. Could you imagine if we'd had The Goblin Empress as a book that we'd done and we discussed in depth for one of the trials, making sure that there wasn't a question of whether they'd been raped as a trial?
Yeah.
No one sees why this might be up there in our problematic awardings of heroes, guys.
It's a very odd book, okay? I'm not saying the world that it creates is not very different from our own.
On our higher power, you've laid out how Cullen definitely gives a gift, but I think you're going to have to stress to me how the man outside of what in our society would be the power move of banging your sisters is actually a higher power to our soon to be prince consort.
Well, when they are introduced, Cullen has more power. Jaren is, at the time of introduction, the country bumpkin being introduced to the court, where Cullen has been nephew to the princesses and very well known among the court. He is very beautiful. He has a lot of sway with the women, and he kind of helps Jaren get some of that swagger, if that's a good way to put it. He is a higher power when they first meet, whereas at the end of the book, I think you're right, Jaren does get more power than him as the prince consort. But in the beginning, in this instance where I want to put this, I think Cullen has more power.
And have we previously accepted being hotter as a domain in which the higher powers exist?
I'm not sure if we've done being more attractive as being a higher power. And I think the book would say that Cullen is not more attractive than Jaren anyway.
Yeah, Jaren is very commonly referred to as one of the most handsome men, obviously, because it's a fantasy romance.
And
your main characters have to be the most attractive people in the world. There's no other option. What is the Disney beauty makes right or something? I don't know. Yeah.
So I've stolen my first argument from Zach's playbook, Alex, but to steal the next one from yours, I feel there's an argument to be made that one, Cullen, like all men in this world, lacks a little bit of agency, and therefore it's harder to attribute him in the same way that we had some trouble with Jaren making decisions, the necessary agency for the higher power. But also from your playbook, the classic fitting people into different roles. Well, I liked Lieutenant Raven as a mentor myself. I also think that Cullen has a compelling argument as a secondary mentor character rather than our touch and go higher powers. They show up, they give something, they might pop in and out later, but Cullen, especially in the way that we've described him here, seems to be doing sort of a very similar thing that Raven herself does. Teaches him more about fitting in society, helps guide him through. It's not a here's the piece of knowledge you need to get through this dinner, or singularly, it's not here's the magic key to the princess's bedroom for your midnight rendezvous.
No, I can see that argument, I guess. But in my mind, the mentor and the higher power have a lot of similarities. Cullen, just from the time that he comes in, fits the higher power role a little bit more for me. And he does kind of like pop in, give advice on clothes for the ball, pop out, and in a couple times. So I don't know. It's up to Kevin, I think.
I think I have to lean towards Jack on this one. I think that Cullen might fit more as a mentor than necessarily a higher power role, considering he's in a similar place in society to Jaren, and ends up possibly arguably lower in the end of the book. And I just see him more as a mentor similar to Raven than I do a someone who's actually above him and gives him something that maybe couldn't be given by any number of people.
Well, in theory, I wouldn't have a problem with other potential tempting offers from like a secondary suitor was realistically a part of this book. The primary offer that we have to talk about here is part of the evil plan to overthrow the government. And considering Jaren is in love with the princesses and this is a love story, I don't really see this being very tempting. Do you, Alex?
Well, if we're being completely honest with myself, no, this is not a very tempting offer for Jaren. He actually says a couple different times, you know, he only wants to marry the princesses. He's going to be sad marrying anyone else. So,
yeah. I kind of lean towards Jack on this one as well. I think that it doesn't seem like a very strong temptation, if that's what it is.
on our Atonement with the Creator, Alex, you said my favorite words, and when I'm sitting in the other chair, they're normally the bit that I like to hear, which is center point of the journey. But I'm not sure I actually believe you, because hearing Kij's plan really seems like another apotheosis. He gets the information. I get the argument for why this plan and the Porter's general plot is his creator, because it what's brought him in. But I have a hard time buying that this revelation, getting all the information, is what our book was flowing to and what the entire rest of the journey comes away with. The capture in general is, I could see, as a crux, but this particular moment you've highlighted, I'm a little bit against.
Well, I think we have to look at the context of the book. So we start with the attack on the princesses to get cannons, to steal cannons, that leads...
Very Hamilton-esque.
It leads the princesses to Jaren's farm and them meeting. The whole reason that the princesses are eligible to be married to Jaren is because of the Porter's plot that killed the princess's previous husband, who happened to be their brother. And I think hearing the plot and how it's been working for a long time is really the center point of the journey. It's for everyone, right? So Jaren is there hearing how the Porters have kind of manufactured the situation that he's in, and Haley, one of the princesses, is there with him. So it's still connecting him to marrying the princesses later. So I really do feel like it's the center of the journey.
I understand that Haley is, Ciara is there, but it's not quite the grand villain speech to all the assembled princesses on the eve of their rehearsal dinner, revealing that they've all been surrounded and are about to die. Right. I don't know. It's a villain's monologue, but it's just a little bit, at least for me, it didn't quite get there. And so on top of all of this, Alex, well, I get why we're focusing on this moment for Jaren. I think part of it just gets a little overshadowed for me by the fact that Jaren is very much involved in what is sort of the crux and Atonement of the Creator for the book as a whole, which is the previous discovering of the Porter's plans, where he uses his intelligence and his skills. He cracks the letters. He gets the information out. He is kind of the agent of his own rescue, because even though he gets captured trying to bring this information, it ends up helping them defuse the situation, and the princesses are able to save him because of it. So I get why you've come to this later villain speech on the plan as his own personal atonement, but it gets lost for me in this other clear moment as well.
I mean, I think that's fair. It's unfortunate that the book follows two main characters, and the Atonement with the Creator for the book kind of happens with Ren. So, I mean, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think I'd have to give this one to Jack as well.
On the apotheosis, I understand why it's important. It's part of the protecting of his purity, all those things that I hate. I guess just in a book of so many revelations, and several of them in moments that we have talked about as a center point of the journey, it's a separate one. It's important. It matters to his ultimate boon. I just leaves a bad taste in my mouth considering the number of other shocking revelations that we have.
I still have to lean towards Alex on this one. This is a pretty crucial revelation for him specifically, and where his path goes, and like what, you know, basically having him either have his whole life of happiness ever, you know, happiness ever after, whatever, or, you know, getting sent back to his family and all the negative connotations we talked about before, as far as like having to recoup their losses monetarily and all that jazz. So this seems like a pretty fair point.
And on our ultimate boon, it's a nice moment, and I understand why it's important, but since we laid out this quest, I've been saving this one in the back chamber. He already made his match and got his family their money before this happened. So, well, this is what makes him happy and will help us have a long, happy life for our character. Didn't he already kind of accomplish his quest before this?
Yes and no, because they just signed the betrothal agreement. The marriage had been finalized. If he was found to be impure, the whole thing could have been rejected. And he could have had to been sold to a crib. His sisters could have had to return the money. So, yes, he already had this kind of, but wasn't finalized because they didn't have a marriage yet. But now they had this reunion. They can go and have a marriage.
I mean, sure, but I feel like there's still a question of his purity going on around here, isn't there?
Nope, because Haley was there. She saw it. He's good.
So what I'm hearing from you, Alex, is that you're saying sex work is not suitable and that Jaren should be ashamed of his potential other future if this had gone a different way.
That's not what I said.
No, it's not what you said.
I said other things.
I think I'm going to have to give this one to Alex. I think this is a fairly straightforward ultimate boon, which is that he finally has his happy ever after. And it's he's safe, you know, evil's conquered. They can have their marriage and without basically ruining his family's lives. So that concludes the initiation. We're a little bit more split on this one. It looks like it's going to be 3-4, 3 against. Not quite as straightforward as the departure, but I feel like it being a fantasy romance, that kind of makes more sense. You might see some divergence farther in the story. And that sort of brings us to our final section, the return.
For our return here, first we got to kind of refuse that. And this is when Jaren thinks he isn't pure anymore, or at least that the princesses won't think he's pure because he didn't know that Sierra was there with him, watching him the whole time. So he thinks that the marriage is in shambles and he's going to be sent to a crib. But that's quickly resolved. For our magical flight, this is when Jaren passes out during the shipwreck and, you know, wakes up with him in the palace and the princesses quickly coming to see him. For our rescue from without, this is Jaren's sisters and other family, including his aunts and cousins, who come and save not only Jaren from the shipwreck, but also the princesses from the porters. For our crossing the return threshold, I think that this is our marriage ceremony where all of Jaren's family comes and witnesses him being married to the princesses, and this allows him to go on and live his life with our master of two worlds, being a good husband and brother. He's not abandoning his family to become a noble and just be a good husband to the princesses. He's also continuing to be a good brother to his sisters. And of course, our freedom to live, the book explicitly states it. The last line, essentially, is, and he and his wives, and it lists all the wives, would live happily ever after. So the book is telling me freedom to live is there.
Well, Alex, as we come to a end of this long, strange, deeply disquieting trip down a brother's price, my big problem with our refusal of the return isn't its position, it isn't anything else. It's that I feel like it reminds me of why I was so against the resisting his captors as a trial, because all of his cleverness, all of his maneuverings to keep himself near Ciara, what's the point of all of that if he doesn't learn that it matters until now? He wasn't being... why was he being clever doing random shit?
She promised to tell the princesses that he was pure.
Right. And so our smart character is a dumbass for trusting one of his captors.
She rescues him. She does build up. Doesn't
make him question why, like, one of his captors might vouch for him.
She does try to get him away from his other captors at one point. Possibly, you could argue making for some trust, but I'm somewhat leaning towards you in that it is It's a good point.
It's a good moment.
I
might want a retroactive black mark on our road of trials in exchange for this one.
Well, too bad. We already said it was good. So let's go.
The magical flight. I mean, I'm not the judge, but you do have my favorite moments there, Alex. There is a break in consciousness. He's passed out. He's rescued from his shipwreck. But on our rescue from without, it's the pedant in me, but apparently that's what happens when you're sitting on this side of the mic. Your ultimate boon was a reunion with his wives, and I'm a little curious as to how he was rescued from the reunion with his wives, Alex.
Well, he was rescued to get to the reunion with his wives.
Yeah, and obviously we've accepted bits of those before, but this particular rescue feels to me like it's part of our larger, I guess what we would call the Ren plot, right? It's saving him, stopping the Porter's plan, all that stuff. Our ultimate boon is once again focused back on the marriage and, well, right, the shipwreck and the passing out. He is rescued by that and helps get him there. I feel like the big part of this rescue from without is related to our other plot, not his marriage.
I kind of see that. I think that it still is a rescue. You know, his sisters are saving him from the shipwreck, potentially drowning, and delivering him back to the princesses. But I totally understand what you're saying. It does have more relevance to the main plot than just to Jaren.
Yeah.
I have to lean towards Alex on this one. The rescue is literally, they pulled him out of the river. I mean, yes, they also obviously stopped the Porters from killing Ren. They also rescued the Lieutenant Raven from the Riven, I believe as well. But definitely it was a rescue which he could not manage on his own. And I think just because other people were also rescued doesn't negate the fact that he definitely needed their help.
I'm going to tuck the crossing of the turn threshold away for a second, because I think that's going to loop back into my argument on the freedom to live. But starting with our master of two worlds after he does get married, and we're setting him up here to be a wonderful husband and brother, and then explain to me how he's going to continue to be a master of brotherhood going forward, because like he definitely did some good brotherly things throughout this entire quest. But it seemed to me that he's kind of just ditching that half of his life to go be a prince consort for the rest of his life.
Well, I mean, he has to be the husband first. That's his main job now, but he's not abandoning his sisters. He's going to go visit them as often as he can, I think. It's not explicitly stated, but that's what I've chosen to believe.
Solid headcanon.
Artistic interpretation is not often accepted by me while judging, but I get a ruling from Kevin on that.
I lean towards no on this one. I'm pretty sure they're like multiple days by ship away from the capital on their farm. And while Cullen is out there, and I'm sure will give them excuse to visit, you know, the capital with because of him, I don't think he's really going to be in charge of like managing the family like he once was. And like he was basically as the oldest brother, the one who took care of all of the children, cooked and cleaned and, you know, babysat and everything. And I feel like he's very solidly moved out of that role. And, you know, I don't know that you can really call it the mastering of the two worlds.
And thank you, Kevin, for talking about how good he is with children, because that will let me move on to our crossing of the return threshold. Alex, I am happy to not contest this point as long as you are happy to argue that a heroic new normal is a marriage ceremony involving one man, five adult women, and five children.
For the society in the book, it's definitely a normal
Say
thing
the
for
word.
The society in the book.
That normal in society, sure. I need you to say that it is a fits our understanding of a modern hero that this is his return to a new normal.
Mary, you know I'm not going to say that.
But I will leave it at Kevin's discretion.
And there's even a hint that the Prince Consort's chamber are essentially a prison. It's said to keep other people out, but Jaren even notes, like, this is going to be a little bit more confining than my old farm, with a little bit less freedom than I had in the past. So,
but in fairness to you, Alex, we are directly told that they would all live happily ever after. I just don't necessarily believe that one man marrying 10 women and living in a prison will actually have a happy future. He'll be looked after, but he is still a stud and a pet, and also, again, raising his 5-child bride, which makes me want to vomit in my mouth a little bit as I say it. And, you know, in fairness, actually, I would like to revise my statement. I am firmly against this step. We are told that he lives happily ever after, but our argument for freedom to live is without undue influence on his life, and he is a prisoner of his wives.
I mean, he's their property. I wouldn't even go as far as a prisoner. He's their property.
I don't think that I am at all comfortable with that being considered a freedom of any kind.
That's okay. I'm okay with that too.
I'm definitely going to have to lean towards Jack on that one. When you are literally purchased and sold with very little agency in the world that you're living in, to the degree that's like shown in this book, throughout this book. I don't know that even had he stayed on the farm with his sisters, he would have the freedom to live. I mean, he was locked away with his brothers there, you know, again, under the guy, you know, assertion of protection, but it's definitely difficult to call it true freedom. Oh man. All right. So I think that brings us to the conclusion of Return and the journey as a whole. He closes out the return with 4 out of 6, not quite meeting the Master of Two Worlds or Freedom to Live, and with a total score of 11 out of 17, one more point than Wives, he will not end up having enough points to be classified as a hero.
Thank you so much for coming on, Kevin, and guest judging and hosting. It's been a blast.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Hope to do it again someday.
And not normally where our closing thoughts would take us, but from my perspective, this has been an odd treat to get to do the other side of this. I do miss the visceral feel of those judges' powers as I get to hand down rulings rather than having to beg somebody else to accept the point of view. But a lot of fun, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. On the book itself, it makes me deeply uncomfortable because, and I'm not 100% sure that's the point, and that also makes me more uncomfortable. If this was meant to be a meta commentary on sexism and the way that all of this treats women, maybe I would have liked a lot of the subject matter more. But it's a romance with what's meant to be a happy ending, and I just constantly sit there and go, man, if this had female characters, we would be like burning this at the stake.
So as just a comment to that, it was written by a woman who also, having read several of other books, she does do a decent amount of sort of fantasy romance, I guess, or sci-fi romance. And I do believe that this book is somewhat supposed to be a meta commentary on the genre. It takes a lot of the tropes and kind of dials them up.
But it ultimately doesn't have a subversive message about it. It doesn't tell us that this is wrong.
I agree with you. I guess I agree with you. The end, as far as the like subversion and in the conclusion, is not necessarily there. But I don't know.
All right. And for my final thoughts, I think this book is super interesting because it's trying to subvert the tropes. And kind of like we already hinted, I don't think it actually succeeds in doing that at the end, because we end with a weird male fantasy with, you know, one man, many wives, including child brides. So it's, I think at the beginning, Jaren being treated kind of like a doll and having no agency does feel like a subversion of the trope to many fantasy women. But at the end, I don't know, that part takes away a lot of that subversion for me. I do want to say the book is well written. it was engaging. I liked reading it. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the end message.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoy Hero's Journey as much as we love doing it, don't forget to leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts from, and ring your bell, hit your subscribe button, do all the things the algorithms love in order to get more content. We also do have a Patreon if you want to donate to the show. Anything you give to the show, we promise to put right back into making the content that we hope you love. As always, I have been Jack, but for once not your host.
This is Alex.
And this is Kevin.
And join us next week. We'll be back with one of our favorite authors, Brendan Sanderson, and we'll be diving into his Skyward series with the first book, Skyward.
Yay!
Oh, thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Damn it. I missed the O.
I mean, we're just going to use you saying that off time as the stinger anyway.